Our guest today is Sunny Ackerman. She is the global head of on-demand talent at Heidrick & Struggles. With over 20 years of being in the staffing industry, she is one of the most significant leaders there is. It all started at the ranch of her parents, where she grew up in Texas and then decided to go vegan very early and moved into the human capital industries. We talked about her career, how she got where she is today, and everything around managing people, building teams, how she structures her 101, how much personal time she invests in those 101s, and how much is business. We talked about how she copes with the workload and how she finds a valuable cutoff at the end of the day when business is ending. This is a really special episode. I'm really looking forward to this, and I hope you guys are enjoying also our new English episodes. This is the second one with Sunny Ackerman, the global head of on-demand talent at Heidrick & Struggles. Let's go! Jede Woche spreche ich im Behind the Sea Podcast mit Top-Level-Managern und Managerinnen. Alle haben ein Problem. Sie kommen nicht an die richtigen Leute zur richtigen Zeit für ihre Herausforderungen im Geschäft. Egal ob für permanente Rollen oder interimistische Aufgaben, wie zum Beispiel M&A-Projekte, Systemeinführungen, Neuaufbau und Umbau von Abteilungen oder ganze Organisationstransformationen. Oftmals mangelt es an der richtigen Ressource oder eben Kompetenz. Wenn dich das aktuell auch herumtreibt, dann komm gerne auf mich zu. Wir können einmal unverbindlich zu dem Thema sprechen. Mehr Informationen findest du auch auf atreus.de. Ich freue mich auf deine Nachricht auf LinkedIn oder eben via Mail. Und jetzt zurück zum Podcast.
Behind the Sea, der Atreus Podcast.
Ich bin Franz Kugelum, Direktor bei Atreus. Und im Behind the Sea Podcast blicken wir gemeinsam hinter die C-Level-Bühne. Sunny, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Franz. Wonderful to be here.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this for quite a while. I actually wanted you to be the first English-speaking episode for our listeners, but you are the second now, which is still very great, but you
yes,
got beaten.
Second, though. I know, and that's on me, as I said earlier, because I had to reschedule on you, so apologies, but
no worries.
Honored to be the second.
Yeah, Christian Hillebrand was the first one from Vantage Tower, so yeah, but American fellow, so...
Wonderful. Well, congratulations, Christian, on being the first on Behind the Sea. Yeah.
All right. This is also a special episode, which probably all the listeners are going to recognize when you introduce yourself. So let's do this. Introduce yourself to the listeners, and we're curious about what you're doing currently.
Yes. Thank you. So I am with Heidrick & Struggles. Heidrick & Struggles started over 70 years ago, predominantly with the mission of serving clients. And people think of Heidrick & Struggles as predominantly an executive search firm, but we're much more than that, as you know. We have additional offerings within executive search, as well as, you know, assessment services, org design, culture management. And we have a fantastic offering here in Europe under the name of Atreus, where we provide independent talent, I would say, on demand, predominantly interim management. And in the U.S., we have a business called Business Talent Group that we acquired 4 years ago. And Heidrick was really looking at, I would say, diversifying the offerings. And they were looking at adjacent or ancillary products or services that were very complementary to our executive search and consulting business. And they found that with interim management. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a beautiful marriage, I would say, of these businesses that we've acquired, both Atreus 2 years ago here in Germany and Business Talent Group over 4 years ago in the United States. And I have the luxury of being the global managing partner leading the business for Heidrick & Struggles. I joined last year.
Very, very cool. So I think this is a cool chance to get to know you a little bit. I'm curious, what do you think about the advisory leadership, executive search, or on-demand market currently? Because I think it's a super interesting time to be in it, since all of the new technologies, all the challenges. What do you think?
Absolutely. It's a fantastic time to be in this space. Mm-hmm. I think companies continue to be challenged in the current environment in which they're operating in. And talent is such a critical element of any organization, being able to access talent, retain the talent, develop your talent, and really thinking about how we provide, you know, interim management to organizations, being able to leverage type of a variable workforce and a very highly skilled workforce on demand is something that's still fairly, I would say fairly new, maybe more in North America and Europe. It's definitely a bit more mature, but organizations really tapping into highly skilled, very top-level talent to be able to bring them in for different points or different periods of a company transformation is quite exciting. And so I absolutely see this as an area that we continue to evolve and grow. There's still, I would say, in pockets of the world, education and awareness that needs to be done around this type of offering and this type of talent. So I love talking about it because I think more people that learn about it, whether they're on the talent side and wanting to work with us as an advisor or on the client side, people are really fascinated to learn more. And I really believe people want to work differently and clients want to really engage, you know, type of interim management differently. So it's quite exciting to be in the space.
Yeah.
And again, the executive search business is a predominant part of our business. But as we work alongside our executive search and consulting partners, we really benefit in going to market as an advisory firm to the client. So really meeting the client where they're at different points in terms of where maybe their challenges or opportunities are. And so that's exciting being able to be a full skill offering and offering that to different clients across the world.
Yeah, I think this end-to-end service and also the offering is quite interesting because if you remember like 10 or 15 years ago, it was quite tough to get to the people.
Yes.
Because you had to call them in the office where they are still working.
Exactly.
And you had to identify them. Now you can basically go on the internet and search and you have like 2 hours and you can probably find someone who looks suitable. Yes. So it comes more to this overall service, meeting the client, getting to know the clients. I have a few clients that I met actually like 2 or 3 years ago and we stayed in contact and we get to know each other. And then finally, and I think this is a good thing because you have to be ready to look for candidates for them because otherwise, I mean, you have to know them very well because also from the personal side, do you think that as well? And do you think like the personal part is getting like way more important?
I do. I think there's organizations globally that offer more of a platform type of offering where there's more talent, you know, on a platform where you're not necessarily engaging with an individual or human. But I do believe in our business, the relationships, the trust, the credibility, the level of experience that we bring in terms of the type of knowledge that we have in the industries and sectors we work in. And really staying connected with our clients, you know, throughout their different, you know, transitions in their career as well and understanding where their current opportunities are. So I do believe that the personal element or what I would consider the white glove, you know, kind of aspect of our offering is still really, really important. There's some organizations that want to leverage a marketplace and that's able to give them what they need at a particular point in time.
Yeah.
But if the company's looking for something that is a bit unique or they're not quite sure what the challenge might be, they have a challenge, whether it be a transformation or a transaction, or it could be a carve out or a spin out or a cost out, whatever it might be, we're able to come in and really advise with them on what that solution might be and then follow it with the great ability to bring in interim management.
Yeah, very cool.
So it's more of that advisory approach versus coming in with just offering up a particular individual. It's really understanding what the challenge is or the opportunity the client's looking at.
I think so. One objection always is that why should I bring someone in for an interim basis or just for like a non-permanent time period? Do you have an answer for that objection? Because usually I think it's not only about the time span that this task is all about. It's also about the talent that you can actually get from your point of view, because not every company can get every talent globally. So what do you think about that?
I think it's a great question. I would ask the question back to whoever's posing and to say, why not? I think, again, organizations, there's a bit of awareness and education that still needs to occur in this space. And many times I find clients or different companies we're working with are not aware of the type of very, very specialized skill, very experienced talent that we're able to work with across the world. And so being able to explore the type of, again, challenge that they have or the opportunity that they're trying to solve for, and then understanding how you are leveraging more of an interim type of individual at a point in time. And it could be that, you know, again, it's a 3 to 4 month project. You might be going through an ERP transformation and you realize that it's not something you're going to need full time or on a permanent basis. Or it could be that you have a new executive in seat and they're needing to access different type of, you know, advisory solutions. And we can come in and help them with different executive talent around that. Or it could be someone that's exited an organization and they need someone for a short period of time, very immediately. So there's there's various use cases, I would say, for our type of offering. And it really, again, it's understanding where the client's at that point in time and what the opportunity is. So, yeah.
Very good. Do you see any particular trends in the on-demand talent space? Like, for example, AI could be a trend or transitioning management, like you said. Any particular trends?
AI is definitely a trend that we're seeing a good deal of demand in terms of just understanding what specifically AI and where they're at in their particular journey. I think what we're seeing in North America in particular is the interim management offering, specifically in the CFO or financial services sector. So that, you know, the interim offering last year grew over 300%. And we see a great deal of demand in, I would say, CFO minus 1-2 levels. And then the next position, or I would say function, that we see a lot of opportunity in is in CHRO. So anything in the human resources, you know, space, whether it be head of reward or recognition, head of org design, employee benefits, you know, those are areas where companies are tapping into interim management. And then we also, as we spoke about AI, I mean, anything in the technology infrastructure, you know, I think the notion with, you know, companies going through quite a bit of, you know, knowledge learning or learning around AI, and how do they even tap into all the different things that are happening in the space in terms of agentic capabilities, and even what does that mean for their organization? So having someone come in and advise, you know, the company on different points in terms of how they're looking at leveraging AI. It could be, you know, somebody simple in data science, or it could be a CIO on an interim management period. So I think that's definitely an area of growth that we see, of course, a good deal of demand that will be in the next 5 to 10 years.
All right. So this podcast is all about tackling C-level challenges. So can you tell us a few challenges that you are currently facing in your role? So later when we talk about your best practices and your success strategies, maybe we can get the link to the challenges.
The challenge is, as I said earlier, I think organizations are going through quite a bit of change right now. There's a there's a incredible amount of change management within an organization, whether it be that, you know, technology that you're implementing within an organization, the global, you know, economic kind of environment in which we're in terms of organizations navigating some of the geopolitical and just some of the, you know, things that are happening worldwide. It's a lot in an organization. In the United States, and of course here in Europe, we have a lot of new political administration in place, and that's creating quite a bit of a challenge in pockets of the world, depending on what kind of business that you're in. And so, again, organizations and leadership navigating that and being able to bring transparency to their organization through communication, but also stay focused on what the business is at hand is, I think, it is a challenge right now for a lot of organizations and leaders. And I would say the office of the CHRO, I think that's probably a very challenging role right now. Anybody that's in a kind of a human resources or talent, because they have a lot coming at them in terms of, you know, we're still navigating very much kind of hybrid working or remote working. And we've got now, you know, artificial intelligence and all the different things that are happening from a technology infrastructure. So plus the demands of finding the right talent, maybe, you know, finding new leadership, you know, transitioning new teams. So there's quite a bit, I think, you know, that particular function is challenged with right now. And I think Heidrick's done a really interesting white paper on the future CPO and really the chief people officer and what, you know, what we're seeing in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of challenges. And it's the one area we would say that there's quite a bit of change happening.
Okay. Any particular challenges on your daily work or anything, you know?
I would say being in a global role is always a bit challenging in terms of time management. So I live on the West Coast in the United States. I live in Los Angeles, California, and I start my day very, very early as I run a global business. Predominantly, most of our operations are on the East Coast, so New York and Chicago, although we have multiple operations throughout North America and globally. But my two major teams are East Coast and Europe. So I start my day really early, typically around 6 a.m.
Okay.
Our company is, we love to be on video conference calls quite a bit throughout the week, and we'd like to see each other. So I'm typically on camera at 6 a.m. dressed, which is sometimes challenging, but I'm able to do it. But I think balancing sometimes just the workload that you have and the ability to manage your time effectively. And then this week I happen to be visiting, of course, Europe. So I come over to our European operations probably 5 to 6 times a year. Yesterday I was laughing because the jet lag is real in terms of, you know, I'm not as young as I used to be. So just sometimes, you know, navigating and being able to be, you know, on with your teams is really important. So, you know, physical and mental well-being are really, really important in a role like this. And so making sure you're taking care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard a very funny quote couple of weeks ago. So it was like we are coming from a knowledge oriented society where, you know, if you have the knowledge and if you know everything and if you know it fast, you are probably having an advantage over your competitors or whatever. And now we are moving into a society where it's more about resource allocation. So you have so many things that you can do, but you have to figure out what it's going to be. And yesterday I tried out a new app where you can just type in maybe for like 2 or 3 minutes for an application. So you want an application to track your daily tasks.
Yes.
For example. And it spits out the application with hosting, with a website.
Yes.
Fully covered.
Incredible.
So basically you can start a software business over the weekend. So I think it's more moving into a resource allocation.
Yes.
Society.
Where you spend your time. It's interesting. And I think we utilize Microsoft internally. Within Microsoft, there's a, you know, Viva Insights, and it gives you an insight in terms of where you spent your week.
Oh, yeah. I know.
And it's quite fascinating because you look at a lot of the, and I do this quite a bit, and I think as leadership, we should, is the amount of internal meetings we have versus external, client facing, really being in the market. And so, really evaluating where you're spending your time. As a leader, I think, and as anyone in an organization, time is fleeting at times. And so we've got to be able to ensure that you're spending it in the right areas of the business. Yeah. And part of our business being in the people business, we spend a lot of time with our teams and a lot of time with our clients and customers. And I think that's a really important piece, is to always step back and look at how you are allocating your time. Also, the team around you. So having a fantastic team around you and being able to, you hire for the areas in which, you know, you need to bring in certain strength or capabilities, but also maybe where there's weaknesses or areas as you as a leader. So not trying to do everything, because you can't do everything really, really well. But what are the one or two levers that you need to pull that month or that quarter to really impact or inflect performance? So
very interesting.
It's tough, though, because I think, again, there's a lot of demands, I think, happening within organizations today. And they're, you know, sometimes balancing and really looking at where to, you know, this can wait or this doesn't need to happen right now. And where does my time, where is my time best well spent? So, yeah.
So let's park that thought, because I want to talk about that a little bit later, how you, you know, structure your day maybe and all the best practices that you have in your role. But let's get to know you a little bit better. Can you tell us how you got where you are currently at? And let's start with the earliest point that we need to understand in order to, get how you became who you are right now.
I think my career was one that wasn't a straight line. It was definitely marked by, I would say, curiosity, grit, and having the right mentors at the right moments. I started in the human capital and recruitment space over 30 years ago. And I grew up in a very, very small town in South Texas in the United States. My father was a cattle rancher who was also in the oil and gas business, and my mother was a legal secretary. So I worked, I grew up in a family that was very much working and, you know, knew the value of work and the benefit of work. And my brother and I lived a very interesting life, and in growing up in a small town in South Texas and on a ranch. And I always knew that I wanted to probably do something different. My family predominantly, you know, stayed in that area. And I always had aspiration to do something else, to do something more, to have maybe impact in the world. So went to university, graduated, and really fell into the space of recruitment. So started an IT recruitment. At the time, I'm really dating myself, this is again many years ago when it was hardware recruitment versus software. So I started in the professional services recruitment space in IT. And my career has been really mapped across various different types of organizations. I've worked in, you know, large publicly held organizations, as well as private equity backed organizations in a variety of different roles. But I would say, being in this industry, I've pretty much done a lot of the different roles that, you know, whether it be in business development or recruitment or to single management, you know, of operations to multi-unit management to, you know, my last organization or several organizations ago was running the North American business, which is about a $1.2 billion business. And we had at that point in time about anywhere between 10 to 15,000 people we put out on different types of project work each week. So really large operations to now running the global interim management business for Hydrogen Struggles. So it's been a journey, not a straight line, but it's been one that I feel has been marked with a lot of different incredible opportunity that's given me a great deal of exposure in a lot of different areas of, I would say, this industry in which we're in, which is advisory services. And I'm really fortunate to be able to have that that career path.
Very cool. What did your parents say when they, you know, got to know that you don't want to stay in the family business?
They were not surprised. I was always a bit of the unusual one in the family, the one that, you know, again, growing up in a very small town and my father being a cattle rancher, there was a point in my life at a very young age that I went vegan. And my father was like, we raise cattle for a living and we eat beef. And I was like, no, we're going to, I was being vegan. So I was always a little bit like, you know, pushing the envelope with my family. So they knew that I was probably not someone that's going to be in the family business and want to live in a very small town. It's a great lifestyle. I have a lot of friends and family that still are there, but it was something that I knew I wanted to do something different. And so when I started in the recruitment sector, they were quite fascinated to learn, you know, more about what I was doing. I would get constantly people sending me resumes or friends or family, like, you know, can you help so-and-so find a job? And so, you know, it's been a great journey and they've been incredibly supportive throughout my career. Yeah. Got it. And I learned a lot from my father because, again, he working in a very, you know, small independent business where, you know, your word is kind of in your handshake as you didn't have a contract many times in businesses. And so the value of the relationships and the rapport that you would build with people, but, you know, having that ability to, you know, your word was what what you said is what you did. And so I learned alongside him and as well as my mother that, you know, again, the importance of that relationship piece, but also the value of work. Yeah.
It's interesting. So I usually, so this is like the 250 something episode. So I talked to quite some, thanks.
Amazing.
To quite a load of different executives and they have something in common, so a few of them, that they had to fight for what they wanted to do. So they weren't like, you know, set on this path. So they had different paths figured out and they had to fight for another path. So this is why I ask you if your parents, if they wanted you to stay in the family business and you were like, no, I want to do this. I want to, you know, go to the big city and start a Korean stuffing.
Yeah. It didn't exactly. And it could have been my brother stayed in the family business and worked in you know, the very small town in which we grew up in. And a lot of my family around me did. But they, again, were, I think, supportive, also knew that, you know, let me explore and do what I want to do. And, you know, they were, you know, again, confident and I had their backing and support. But it was something that, you know, again, was a bit of an exploratory. And again, I didn't know I would really fall into this industry and space, but it was something that the opportunity came to me right out of university. And I felt like it was a really interesting path. I worked my way in my entire time through college. And I worked my last year in a public relations and marketing firm. So I've always been very extroverted and very people oriented. And I've been very inquisitive and I want to learn. And I'm always continuously learning. So, you know, coming into the space was something I did not know, but I really fell in love with the industry and being able to talk to a variety of different clients and companies around the challenges that they were facing and being able to help them with accessing great, you know, talent, which was, to me today, it's still an invigorating career because it's probably a very challenging career because it keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, it keeps me up at night.
Yes.
Because when I wake up, I think about the different assignments that I have, because I usually, it's sometimes a little bit, you know, I'm getting nervous because I have this responsibility for like one of the side of the company to recruit someone who fits, but even more for the person who's probably changing their life, right? Because they kind of have to move.
Exactly.
They do it for 8 to, let's say, 12 hours a day. So that's half of their current life.
Yes, exactly. No, it's in, and I've always told people this, it's impactful work that we do. So never lose sight of the purpose of the work that we do. And, you know, people's career or, you know, and different points of their career and their different jobs are very pivotal parts of people's lives.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So
mm-hmm.
it is an important task and an important role that we do play. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't keep you up at night, then probably, you know, then you probably should change careers because it means that you have a passion and you really love what you do and you care about the people, you know, that you're working with and the companies that you're supporting. So, yeah.
Great. So you probably saw quite a huge amount of resumes during your career, right?
Yes. Yes.
Can you estimate
some like... great, some not so great. And still today, it's interesting. I constantly still review resumes because now I'm at a point in my life where I have, my husband and I do not have children, but we have lots of nieces and nephews that are entering that point in life when they're looking at careers. And so I'm still reviewing resumes at this point in my career and giving people feedback. But yes, I've seen quite a bit of resumes over the years. Yeah.
Do you think that there is also like a new way of resume in the in the future, maybe like a, I don't know, a website or anything like that?
A website or, you know, even like a QR code or something where, you know, it's a bit more fluid or it's can be updated more, you know, real time. It's interesting, though, because CVs or resumes are something companies still look at, right?
Yeah,
they really do. But I think there's also people want to know more behind the experience and the content and the individual. So the resume or CV will get you so far in terms of the hard skills or certification or certain types of things that you have done. But it's going beyond that and being able to really understand more about who the person is, the impact they've had, their story. And also culturally and behaviorally, how will they fit in an organization? Because that's as important, I would say, as the hard skills.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but it is fascinating, right? That you still see... resumes are something that is still very much a predominant thing that we do in our business. You don't see cover letters as much anymore. Do you remember? Do you remember cover letters back in the day?
Yeah, for sure.
So that was something we would have to do a cover letter that would like give you an introduction about you and your background. But I do see maybe there's going to be more technology enhancements around those types of things.
I think the cover letter is coming back in a different way.
I do. In more of a bio. It's more give me, synthesize your 2 to 3 page resume and give me more of a bio or insight about who you are.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
And also maybe with references or stuff like that, you can have like more of an interactive
resume. Right? I think people, again, I think companies many times want to know behind the resume and really who the individual is and anything that can help organizations understand that about, you know, a different individual and also helping individuals with, you know, being able to accelerate their career or get in front of the right people. Because many times it is just being at the right place at the right time, but it's also about your network and really staying connected with that. But you still do have to have a resume.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk about your maybe success strategies, best practices, routines, everything that has worked for you in the past. And this is, you know, this is not like a management book or something. This is just like what has worked for you. And maybe you can share it a little bit with our listeners. So are there any daily routines, weekly, monthly routines, or anything that you think contributes to being in a successful global role? You know,
I think staying very much connected to if you're in a leadership role where you're running a profit and loss and a business, you need to stay very connected to the overall financial goals and objectives the organization has and how your business is tracking towards that. And so staying very connected to your CFO or your head of FP&A and really working closely with them, but staying very close with your teams. And so I do one-on-ones with my direct report team once a week. So I have always a 30-minute check-in with everyone once a week. I do a standing weekly call with my team. I do a monthly and a quarterly leadership call with a team where we review really where are we at with the month. Where are we headed? We do have to reflect back a bit. So yesterday we did, in the business, we did a bit of a global quarterly town hall. And I think it's always important to reflect where we were and where we're headed and how are we tracking towards different strategic, you know, objectives that we have in the business. But bringing people along, I think sometimes there's a lot happening in organizations right now and people are confused in terms of the work that they're doing and how does it contribute to the bigger picture. So hopefully, as leaders, being able to articulate and connect the dots for people to understand where they're at a different organization and what the work that they're doing and how that's providing value in the organization. So, and also just trying to celebrate success. I mean, I think we push very hard every week as a business, you know this, and we're always looking at what are we doing next, but also taking the moment to reflect back on what we've done well. I think more organizations and leaders can do more of that with teams. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. So it's important that we do recognize that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Like during your one-on-ones, can you say or like maybe calculate a ratio of how much is personal and how much is business that you talk with your teammates?
Great question. I would say probably at times there's quite a bit personal because I'm an individual that's quite inquisitive and I want to know about people and really how they're doing and how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times it's the first 5 to 10 minutes on what's going on in their lives or what's happening. If they've had a new baby or they've been having a challenging month at work and we've been working through things, it's really understanding where they're at and how I can maybe help them. Mm-hmm. And then when we spend the rest of the time, I tend to want a bit of a structure around if we've had certain things that we talked about the prior week that we want to cover off on to see how we're progressing towards those. If they're implementing a particular, you know, product or, you know, some sort of change in the business, how can I help them? How can I remove blockers for them? Because I think as leaders, sometimes it's kind of helping clear the path for people to be able to do the great work that they want to do. And so helping understand where they're at with certain projects or different types of committees or work that they're doing. But a lot of it is, you know, again, getting to know the person. Mm-hmm. And so I think the personal element is important because especially today's environment, I think the one thing, you know, the past 5 years has taught us is really understanding people have things outside of work. They have families and they have, you know, big families and challenges and environments. And I think COVID gave us a bit of that exposure into people's homes and environment because we were on video calls and seeing what was happening behind the scenes in people's work or people's, you know, life. And so I think it definitely gave a bit more of leadership's insight around an individual. And I hope that more leaders are leaning in there and actually trying to be more, you know, insightful of what's going on in a person's life because work is a big part of it, but there's more than many times, you know, the work that you're doing. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that. So you mentioned the coping with the workload, right? So when I talk to my colleagues, friends and everything, they're always like, well, I could work all day, you know, there's no stop. And since we have cell phones and laptops, we can take it home. Remember the time we got home and you like you shut down your computer and you went home. You know, nothing.
You didn't even have a laptop. You left it at the office. Yeah. Remember, you left it at the office in the docking station, didn't even have that. I remember the day when you didn't even have it. You know, this is, I'm again, really dating myself, Franz, here, in terms of not even a cell phone. We had at a time like the BlackBerry, and that was, or even before that, goodness gracious, a beeper. If people are on the calls, remember that. you had a cutoff, you know, where today there's not that cutoff. So you have to have those, kind of, you know, not walls, but you need to be able to look at that in your environment and know when to sometimes take that break. So
So do you have any tips on how to, you know, get that cut off now because you don't have it physically? So
I enjoy what I do, so I probably I'm not a good person to ask this because I probably put a little bit sometimes too much into sometimes the work week, but I do also realize that, you know, at the end of the day, when, you know, whenever my day is ending, depending on where I'm at in the world, is try to kind of step away from it. So yesterday, for example, it was a really intense day yesterday in the office. We had quite a few internal calls back to back, and it's a beautiful day. And I went outside and took a walk for about 30 minutes, and it just cleared my mind. So I think just being able to realize that when you're at a point in your career, so you might not be able to get that, at the end of the day, but recognizing when you can take that space and time to be able to clear your mind. But again, knowing that, again, the mental and physical well-being is really important, especially in a leadership role. And so being able to have that balance, whatever that balance that you deem is appropriate for you is really important. So, but it's something I would say I struggled with throughout my career because I tend to be a bit of a workhorse. And so, you know, the whole notion of work-life balance is interesting to me because I love what I do. So I tend to put a lot of time and effort into that. But you need time to step away.
Sure.
And clear your mind. So my husband and I, so I think I told you we just moved to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Last year, which is beautiful Southern California. Mm-hmm. So we have a bit of a ritual. He has a very high, intense job as well. We both are, you know, been very career oriented most of our careers. And at the end of the week, we live about 10 minutes from the ocean, Pacific Ocean. So we will typically figure out when sunset's going to be. And we will say, okay, we're going to sign off at, you know, 4:30 or 5 or whenever sunset's going to be. Mm-hmm. And we pack a couple of maybe beers in our pocket and we'll take a walk down to the beach about 10 minutes and we'll watch the sunset.
Cool.
So we started doing that last year, and it's become a bit of a ritual at the end of the week to kind of seal off of having a really great week, but also entering the weekend. Yeah,
we do that as well. So me and my partner, we sometimes we even go through the calendar and talk about what we did today. So
do you? That's fantastic. I think you sometimes as a partner or spouse is learning more about, we do try to understand, like, how was your day? What was the challenge? Anything I can help you with? I have a fantastic partner and I do bounce a lot of ideas off of because he's in a very interesting, very different industry and role, but also has same leadership complexities and challenges that a lot of organizations are facing. And he's a bit of a sounding board for me. And hopefully I am for him as well. So
very cool.
Yeah.
All right. We are almost at the end. One last question. If you wouldn't be in the role that you had right now and you weren't allowed to do anything in business, like nothing business related, nothing technology or whatever related, is there anything that you would pursue?
It's a really great question. It's probably more tied to business. I was just sharing with you, Franz, that I was listening to a podcast this morning, which is Lena Nair, who's the CEO of Chanel, the newly appointed CEO, or 2 years. I love the fashion industry, so I would probably be doing something in fashion or luxury. If it was not in business, something that was helping people really understand the opportunity in that space. But I think to me, like, fashion brings me happy. Mm-hmm. It brings me happiness. So something in that space that, you know, people can tap into and be able to understand and make themselves happy.
Cool. More in the design part or?
Probably more into the design, but more into also the styling, the stylistic. I love style. I love fashion. I think it's just it's such an evolving space that people still, it brings them joy and happiness, you know, depending on, you know, not everyone, right? Not everyone, but I think for a lot of people it does. And so it's a fascinating industry for me.
Very cool. Well, Sunny, thank you so much for doing this. This was really fun. And I think everyone who listened to this had quite some fun as well.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. It's been great.